Hello everyone, this is Sylvie Avery and welcome to Spirit's Work, the metaphysical and spiritual information show designed to stretch your mind and help you to think outside of the box. And on today's show, as usual, my husband Mick will be deep trance channeling, and today we will be talking about our listeners' questions. I will be putting up the questions that have already been sent in to me, to Spirit Guide Gregory Hay, and also you can phone in with your own question to Spirit Guide Gregory, and it's not a reading style situation. He's not going to give you a reading, but it's anything to do with whatever you might think a Spirit Guide can help you with or enlighten you with, any questions that you might have about life, the universe and everything. Then you can phone in on, in USA it's 877-876-5227. In Canada, it's 888-815-9756, and they are both toll-free. The international call, you have to pay for, but it's only a quick call, and that is 001-530-876-3222.
Hi, I'm Mick Avery, and as well as Spirit's Work on the wonderful, ever-present and ever-growing bbsradio.com, every Sunday at 10 a.m. PST, which is 6 p.m. GMT, we have another radio show, and that's called Spirit Teaching, and you can hear that on artistfirst.com every Tuesday at 4 p.m. PST. That's midnight GMT. If you would like to know more about us, our book CDs, maybe book and Akashic reading, we suggest you go visit our website, which is at www.spirit-teaching.com. Also live at www.spiritsworkradio.com. And now at for European and UK listeners, it's at www.mickavery.com. Now, as Sylvie said, I am a deep trance medium, and each week live on the show, I channel Gregory Hay, who had an earth life 300 years ago. I have the ability to completely hand over my physical body to the spirit world so they may use it to speak through, and I will know absolutely nothing about what has happened during this time, and this is the way it should always be for real, pure spirit communication. Now, when I go into the deep trance state, my conscious mind and my spirit are transported elsewhere by the spirit team who work with us, and then they bring me back when the spirit communicator leaves. I not only miss the whole show, but I very rarely remember where it was they took me either, because it doesn't matter. That's not the issue. The issue is that I vacate my physical body so that listeners and people who visit with us or whatever are then able, during the spirit communication process, the mechanism allows only the spirit world to interact with you, the listener, or the people who happen to be with us at the time. So anyway, that's the whole situation. Without further ado, I'm going to hand you back to Sylvie, who's going to take the rest of the entire show, and it's really just to say that I'll see
you.
Bye.
Okay, so Mick's going off, and I'm going to see, it looks like we might have a call already, actually. So you're going to be going off now, Mick, aren't you?
Yes, I am, aren't I?
He's looking at the computer.
She hates it. I'm still here. I'm not supposed to be here.
Absolutely. Anyway, I'll be with the caller in just a minute. Gregory is the spokesperson for a group of spirits of higher intelligence called the White Cloud Group, and they consist of many great minds as well as ordinary people. Between them, they have access to vast knowledge and insight. And so that they've come now to share their understanding with us, because it will help us to think beyond the constraint of our human minds. So the subject matter we cover is absolutely limitless, and really, hopefully it will help you become more knowledgeable and better informed as to the nature of your existence. That is your eternal existence, basically. I would just like to take this opportunity to say that we do Akashic readings. If you ever wanted a reading with Gregory, like I say, we don't do readings on this program, but we do Akashic readings one-to-one with Gregory. If you would like to get in touch on enq@spirit-teaching.com, or just go to our Akashic readings page on our website, which is, like I say, www.spirit-teaching.com. I'm going to welcome Gregory before I take this call. Are you here, Gregory?
Hello, friend.
Only just.
Hello, friend. Hello.
He dragged you in kicking and screaming.
Oh, not at all, friend. It was rather a case of getting rid of our dear friend.
Getting rid of him, yes. I know. He was just intent on what was happening on the screen, wasn't he? Okay, I'm going to go to this caller anyway. If it is a caller, is it? I don't know if it is or not, actually. I don't think so. Anyway, there we go. I'm going to continue with this situation anyway, because I do have an email already sent in by Ryan from Canada.
Yes.
So I think we'll start the program anyway with this, because I think it's a very interesting question. What is the funniest thing someone has done as a result of discovering their survival and arrival in the spirit world that you've witnessed or that you've heard about? You know, like they realized that there is no death, that they're still alive, and you know, to their joy or to their sort of shock. Is there anything interesting that you can tell us about?
Yes, my dear friends. What had happened in actual fact was, we've had this on a number of occasions, but one specific situation I can remember was that we had a gentleman who had passed to the spirit world. It was actually during an act of war, I understand. Rather sad, perhaps, but that he had actually come to our side of life, and when he actually tried to organize his consciousness, and understand that he was where he was and we were where we were, and his friends and family were around him in a sense, he actually tried then to say something and nothing would come out. He tried to move something and he promptly tipped himself upside down. The situation then became that he moved in one direction not known to him, which was that he moved back and beyond in time from where he was, and then he promptly came back again, I suppose in a sense out of misinterpretation of what his thought was. The point was then that from our situation of it, he was at one point the right way up and then suddenly turned himself upside down and then simply disappeared, but appeared to be moving backwards, and then re-emerged again, but actually did so coming through three other people, so that it was in a sense quite a bit of chaos. And that is oftentimes what we find, that in these hilarious situations which are then transpired, and of course there is a great deal of laughter over it, in a sense, because it's just a being who had a physical body and a physical voyage, understanding perhaps something more of their consciousness, and then really interacting with it, but in such a way as that they are not understanding consciousness relative to the spirit world, because it's a multidimensional and multifaceted place. Means that you can think of something, and it's not going to be interpreted in exactly the same way as it was in physical life. There is not necessarily an up or down or an I am standing on the ground situation in the spirit world, because it doesn't actually exist unless the fabric of personality creates it.
Okay, but presumably you were standing around, let's say for ease of our understanding.
Yes, let's say that.
You were standing around and then this person arrived.
Yes.
Okay, so he could see you?
Yes, absolutely so. Yes. And immediately began opening his mouth and mouthing words, because already his consciousness had recreated the physical state, because that was the forthcoming memory.
Mm.
The first memory that he had was the integral memory, which is what all beings have, incidentally, when they pass to our side of life. Their first memory is the subconscious, the memory of cell structure, the memory of the being that you are. Yes?
Yes, okay.
And that's, in a sense, the first part before real consciousness steps in. Then you have the situation which he presented, which was that he didn't know how to actually make sound come out. You would have thought that that was actually a part of his subconscious memory. However, I understand, because of the fact that he actually had a different situation in his physical life, being that that part of the last part of his consciousness was missing, in fact, was the connectivity between his conscious mind and him being able to emit sound due to whatever had brought him to our side of life. That was, in a sense, something that was simply missing. And that he had to learn to retrace the steps of his conscious mind back a few days from the time that he had passed, so that he could then reanimate that.
Did it take a couple of days before he got to that situation then?
No, it didn't.
Oh,
not at all.
Right.
But I'm saying, though, that in a sense, what we were then able to do, once he came back and was standing the same way up that we were only standing that way up, of course, so that he would feel normal, in a sense, but that he actually did everything roundabout, you see? So
okay,
he actually ended up in upside down land.
So that was just upside down land. So that was just a mistake that he made.
Yes.
How
absolutely.
Would he feel in that instance? I mean, would he feel scared, frightened, obviously a bit confused, but would he still be aware of the fact that what was going on, as it were, you know, like he couldn't work his body like he thought he could?
Yes, well, that was, I suppose, what was, in a sense, quite unsettling for him, because he first saw us, opened his eyes, we were all one way up and he was another way up, so that he immediately, in a sense, shrank back. And in that creation of what he did, he didn't even know that he was in the spirit world at that point, because he saw, although some loved ones, I don't believe that it actually registered upon him until a little while afterward, once he regained himself and we began talking and conversing, that he was then able to, oh yes, your uncle so and so and whatever, you see?
Yeah, so
but you passed in so many years ago, and yes, hello.
So do you ever get people, like, you know, doing the happy dance, or, you know, trying to do a happy dance anyway? And
oh, well, yes, of course.
Or shrieking out something really ridiculous, like, you know, in their excitement. It doesn't happen like that.
No, not really.
You know, because I can just imagine the sheer relief and the sheer joy of realizing that, yes, life does continue, however different it is.
Yes.
You know.
But that's true.
Because we talk about religion and people getting stuck in that, and then that being a problem when they get to the other side sometimes, that they have to, you know, because they can still be stuck in that conscious pattern of thought, as it were. And being, to be quite honest, you've said before that if their relatives who they meet are still in that religious stance and way of thinking and still doing all of that,
yes,
then they will just could just continue anyway, couldn't they?
That is quite true, and that really, in a sense, means that they still then will continue in that personality. And that doesn't say mean to say then that we'll try to usurp that energy or try to bring them around from that. That's a matter for them to come and ask of us, not for us to presume anything upon them. We would not dream of doing that, contrary to many people's beliefs, you see.
Absolutely. I just thought that was a really good question, because yes
something absolutely
light-hearted, so. It's nice to think about something more light-hearted.
Oh, absolutely so.
You know, talking about death.
Yes, oftentimes as well, dear friend, we will actually, in the tracking of someone's consciousness, we will actually try to illuminate to them something that they really enjoy doing in the physical side of life, and then help them to express that again in the spirit world, because it's actually something that they can carry on doing. Not obviously if it involved taking other life. I understand that there are some human beings who have a joy or compassion to do with such things.
Oh, yeah, well, like hunting and things like
that. Yes, quite so.
Well, actually, on that subject, what about animals and their reaction when they get to the spirit world? I mean, especially, well, let's talk about both sides of the coin then. Okay, the hunted and also something, a loved pet.
Yes.
How do they react? Do they actually fall into that way of being quicker because they haven't got the constraint of maybe a religious belief or anything like that and other situations?
Yes, are you talking of a loved pet?
Yes.
So in that situation, it is absolutely that, of course, because they have been beloved by a being of human understanding, doesn't mean to say that they have then raised their vibration. What they've done is they have changed their vibration from being, shall we say it's a dog, from being normal dog and in normal dog speak and language and interactivity with other normal dog, means to say that they would normally attain a certain specific language, hierarchy, understanding, underpinning of their relationships, and so say. The problem then is emitted when they change their expectancy and their, reconstruction because of human relationships with them. Now, I understand that human beings return this relationship in the form of love. And love, in a sense, is a part of the essence of all beings, except that they don't necessarily interpret it as that. That's really from the emotional human point of view of understanding conception of love, and understanding what love means to them is not necessarily what love means to dog. Love means to dog that simply they're going to get their meals on time. Love means to dog they're going to be fed and watered. They're even going to be mucked out. They're going to be cared for, dried when they're wet, and also helped to keep themselves clean and really, in a sense, for that duty of care. Many people understand their emotional field that will obviously raise their vibration to an emotional human equivalent. My point, however, is that many animals who aspire and create relationships with human beings, as within other animals, will do so anyway, and they will raise their expectation and learn from their relationship. That's the point, really. So that is much of the energy that will be taken with them to the spirit world. What happens with the relationship of human being and dog is that human beings give love to them. Ah. And then love is returned to the human being by the dog's own language. The dog's own language, lick, lick, means simply, not necessarily that it's trying to return you to you that question, but rather that it's, in a sense, thanking you for giving it that form of attention. What happens then in the spirit world when dog comes to the spirit world from such a loving relationship? Yes, its energy has been changed by that human relationship in exactly the same way, friend, as dog's energy will have changed if it makes an equal relationship with a cat, or a canary, or some other being, maybe a pig, or maybe an elephant, or some other being. Whatever the being is, it will have strengths within that relationship that will help it to understand more about itself, because it's actually valued that relationship. It's actually meant something to it. And that's the point, really. So when you are giving loving energy toward dog, dog is giving it back as soon as you give it. In response, is behaving coherently to that loving energy you are giving to it. When a dog passes to the spirit world, yes, it means it has changed its vibration somewhat. It's still dog. It's not more human than dog, contrary to popular belief. However, dog tends to mirror, because it's very clever, certain human traits and expectancies human beings reveal, because of dog's intelligence, enables dog to imitate that and to understand it and record it. So this means that dog, once in the spirit world and having had that relationship with human being, simply means it's able to return to human being and give of itself again because of that love relationship between them. And that means it's something that's kept within the registry of camaraderie, in a sense, from dog and of its own spirit makeup. So dog has been very happy. All of the family of dog are very happy that the person-human interaction with dog, the spirit, has enabled it to become unified and understand a great deal more about relationships into species.
There's quite a few questions I've got around that, but I'm going to say this one first, just before I forget it.
Yes.
Do pets that have had quite a learning experience with human beings, I'm not saying they're better because they've been humanized, I don't mean that.
No.
All I mean is just in an experience.
Yes.
Do they go back to their soul group? Like, say it's a dog, do they go back to their soul group of dog?
Absolutely.
And actually take this information that they have learned and share it with their fellow dogs, maybe that haven't had a physical life?
Yes.
Or even maybe have, do you think?
Yes. And they'll share that too.
And how does that happen?
How does that happen? They share it by the illumination of their life. So they, in a sense, with their energy, bring about that memory to all other dog within their soul group. And there it is, played out in exactly the same way, my dear friend, as your consciousness will play out certain elliptical parts of your journey when you choose, and sometimes when you don't choose, simply because you have to understand and gain control of the consciousness, which in a sense is why it is that we try to ask people of the human physical state to try to learn the Sesi meditation so that they will become more illuminate both within their journey of the physical state and also in the spirit world.
Okay, so is the domestic pet met by... does that make a difference to who meets the animal? So let's say, would a wild dog who'd never seen a human being be met by or be around a human being when they arrive to the spirit world? Or
no.
Would it be... No, okay. So
no,
that would,
absolutely not.
Right.
That would bring it into fear.
Yes.
Exactly the same way, friend, as if you have a pack of wolves, and the pack of wolves, or one by one, perhaps they pass to the spirit world, they'd never see a human being.
Mm.
Unless it was something of a relationship that consequently, once they had returned to their soul group of dog, that they themselves interrelated with another being of dog who had a human relationship. And then that illumination would be something shared by all dog. You see?
Hmm.
Mm. It's exactly the same way as you would have other conditions of other dog and their relationships with other beings.
Hmm. But pets who had interacted with human beings...
Yes.
Could be met by human beings now in the spirit world, shall we
yes.
say, and or as well as other animals?
Absolutely. They will actually be met by other animals first.
Right.
Always. Always.
Okay.
Even if they knew other human beings in their own physical life.
And even if that particular animal, say it was a dog that actually didn't get on with other dogs.
Yes.
That actually fought with other dogs, that didn't like other dogs at all.
Yes.
Would that still be met by a dog, or would it?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Yeah. So, of course, yes.
Okay.
Because that dog would have had another dog as a spirit guide in any event, as a doorkeeper for its journey.
Okay, well, that's an interesting point.
Yes.
So all pets have a doorkeeper?
No, all beings.
All beings have a doorkeeper.
Yes, have another being of their same state, usually. Yes. Now that, in a sense, can be quite interesting, because where some species are concerned, like within humans, they may actually have a doorkeeper that's not human, or that was not ever a human being. Mm. I don't want everyone to race for the nearest alien.
No, yes, we do discover that occasionally.
Occasionally.
Yes, with the Akashic reading that we do.
Yes.
Yes. If you would like to just describe doorkeeper, and then I'd like to talk more about animals and their doorkeepers, if they're called that.
Yes, so a doorkeeper, or dog keeper, a doorkeeper in this respect, is the being who walks with you, is the witness to your life, regardless of what that life is, how you enact it. So if you are an incredibly negative being, whatever species you are, you would have actually a doorkeeper who walks with you and is the witness to that life. This being does not put themselves in your place, does not take upon the responsibility for your life in as much as to tell you what to do. This person, this being, this energy, this supplicant of energy from the spirit world will actually be simply as a witness, who does not judge the being they are the witness of. And therefore, it means that the journey will be witnessed by someone, always. The journey is witnessed by someone.
Hmm.
And that means that once that being returns to the spirit world after having had their physical life, that their journey and accounting of their journey will be able to be amplified by the doorkeeper who was with them, blessed with them during that journey. And in exactly the same way as the doorkeeper in human conditions will actually join with that person's journey, with that spirit's journey of a physical existence at the time of their conception, so it will be that the doorkeeper will also join at that point of conception.
Hmm, okay. So if we could stick to then animals and their doorkeepers, would you still call them a doorkeeper if it was for an animal?
Yes.
Okay.
It's the same condition. Doesn't matter what the species is.
Okay, so would it be a dog with a dog, cat with a cat?
Yes.
Or could
normally.
Okay. Could you have somebody who has been a human being, had an earth life, be an animal's doorkeeper?
It is possible.
Hmm.
Yes.
Okay. Okay. So then, how will that help? What role will that being help the animal when they get back to the spirit world, if we stick to animals?
In the expression of that being, enabling them to recount their story, really. So that's how it comes about. The animal, don't forget, all animals have a language structure, unbeknown, most probably, to human understanding, but they do.
And all have a story to tell.
And they all have a story to tell of what they did in their life. Day one.
Mm.
From day one to day 42, or to day 3 if you're a caddisfly.
So when does a doorkeeper give up the role that they have with a being when you get back to the spirit world, be it an animal or a person?
Yes, it's a mixed condition, really. It depends entirely upon the role and the situation that then continues. It may well be that after a few, I can't really say days, just after some realization has elapsed, rather than time, it is better to say it and paint it in ways of realization by the being who passed. That will mean the doorkeeper's duty of care is over and past.
Okay. So, going back to the first question,
yes.
Is it easier for an animal to adapt to the spirit world because of, like I say, no religious beliefs, or even no belief or thought about death or what was going to happen afterwards, or even that death existed, maybe? Or, I mean, they do, obviously, because of the fight and flight thing.
Yes, but quite so.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Yes. Is
it easier, and do they adjust quicker, basically, than humans?
Yes, they let go. That's
right.
The point. They let go much quicker, particularly in cases of fight or flight where they are in danger of, where it's not just a matter of adversarial conditions, but is that they know that they're going to be food.
Do they know they're going to be food, or do they just know it's going to be curtains?
No, they will know that they're going to be food, yes.
Which is why it makes it so difficult, doesn't it, when you're working with a fight or flight animal like a horse?
Yes, that's right. And that's, in a sense, why it's always so difficult for human beings to interact with it in any way and to actually even understand the ramifications of what God could be in such a contentious situation.
Okay, do you want to elaborate on
that? Well, in that respect of, if you are looking at then perhaps a gazelle and a deer and a bear or something like that, and you see the adversarial role of the deer, which is taking flight, but that in terms of a short span is no match for the bear's speed or in fact agility, and that's quite difficult to comprehend. And then when the bear actually knocks the animal down, it's then still in a state of fear flight, but that once it's upon it, it in a sense succumbs, it lets go. That's what the deer does. It lets go.
So are you saying that its spirit leaves its body before it's killed? Or not exactly?
Not exactly, no.
Can that happen,
but
though?
Yes, it can happen. For some beings, it does. It's just that they don't play dead, they just simply leave. Well, what would be the point in them staying? And the point is that, in essence, I suppose, you could say that oftentimes what will happen is that the immediate, physiologically I'm talking about, what actually happens is the immediate shock event of some part of the animal being taken away simply takes away its consciousness.
Okay.
And then is something that's immediate. So oftentimes people look and see something, some event like that, and feel that it is some really dystopic act or whatever, but that in actual fact the consciousness oftentimes soon leaves. It's very much in terms of the way that birds, for example, their suffering is very minimal in a physical sense. When they are, perhaps, shall we say, a pigeon that is taken by a hawk will, in fact, pass very, very quickly.
Okay.
Because
well,
it simply lets go, you see.
That's good to know. Absolutely. Okay, if you'd like to join us with a question, then to Spirit Guide Gregory Hay, we'd love to hear from you. The number is free phone in the USA, 877-876-5227, Canada, 888-815-9756, and international callers, it's not toll free, but the number is 001-530-876-3222.
I would just like to say and add also, my dear friend, that to that, as an addendum to that, it's in fact that part of the physiological structure of most animals is that they have this, in a sense, fail-safe device that enables them to just simply switch off their consciousness when not before they are necessarily, that their life is taken outright, but that at the point of no return, where they understand that they are returning to the spirit world. They just simply let go. And it's part of the physiological apparatus of that happening as well. Yeah.
Okay. So does time have anything to do with that, as in how quickly they adjust? For instance, with something that was not here for very long, would it adjust that much quicker when it got back to the spirit world because it hadn't been gone very long? Or would it, because it's relevant to their lifespan, still be, you know, like I say, if they say 7 years to every 1 year for a dog, for instance.
Yes, yes.
Would that make any difference?
No, not really.
No.
In actual fact, because of the fact that it always comes from a human being perspective, I'm so happy in many respects that you actually illuminated to the time of dog in its life, to how it recollects and also understands, ascertains the passage of time. In fact, the product of one and one to some animals is actually simply not met. They don't realize it. And to others, they do. So, in a sense, they measure out their day. If it's something that's illuminated to whether they are going to be fed at a certain specific time, they will actually have their body clock internally registered to that time period. Whereas if they were working in the natural world environment, it would simply not be there. They would just know that they were hungry, whenever it was that they woke up, or whenever it was that they decided that their energy was being depleted, so they had to go and get something to eat.
Well, now they have to watch us eating, don't they?
Yes.
So they're sort of like hungry all the time.
Yes.
Because, you know,
quite
what
so.
It's like,
yes.
Watching people eat. Oh,
yes.
Ooh,
whereas in actual
that.
Fact, of course, it's much more empathic to them to eat with the other beings who are also eating.
Yes.
In a sense, it's a bit like, I suppose, if you are being the master of the pack, they are. What is happening if you are stopping them from eating their own food is that they are being honorable as honorable pack members to your master of being master of their pack, you see?
Okay. Well, you've said before about in the spirit world that we can carry on, and if we want to eat, we can learn how to create that and go through that experience and do lots of things that we do here if we want.
Yes. But you wouldn't eat meat, of course.
No, well, I was going to say, actually, that what about animals? Do they continue to want to eat, you know, even if it's horse-eating? Yes, well, is it horse-eating grass as well? Okay.
Horses eat grass. They also eat flakes of snow. They eat other things. Or they simply don't contend with that energy. They don't necessarily continue with that energy, you see. That's exactly the same as human beings when they come to our side of life. Don't necessarily need to eat anything. They don't need to sleep. There is no sleep. There is no eating. That's just something that some people like to do. Some spirit, now back in the spirit world, from their physical journey, like to do occasionally to reminisce, to remember, use the creative memory, mind control, consciousness to enable them to then, in a sense, revisit those fields of activity they created in their physical life. After all, that's what's created them, in a sense, of their conscious activity, their memory of their journey.
Well, you do it for fun sometimes, don't you?
I do, yes. I make lemonade for people.
Yes.
For people who have just come to our side of life. I give them a glass of lemonade.
And how do you make that?
With lemons, of course.
Ask a silly question.
Only real lemons and water.
Okay. Now then, one might say, how can you have real lemons in not, you know, when it's not a physical world?
The lemons, in a sense, don't mind. They're quite happy for me to use them in that situation. Because they are replenished in any event. It's only cells.
Okay, you have to explain from the beginning. Would you explain from the beginning how you make lemonade in the spirit world? Because it might seem not quite so interesting to you, but it's fascinating to us.
Yes, I understand. Well, quite simply, my dear friend, what happens is I look at my past memory. And when I started making lemonade, was not actually in physical life. I was shown how to make lemonade by a being I met in the spirit world after I passed. And that was something that took place in the halls of learning, because that's what the halls of learning is for. So I was actually shown a book that had the story of lemons, because I had never ever met with a lemon in my physical life. I'd heard about them, but I'd never actually seen one. That's my point, you see?
Okay.
So that what happened was, this friend had then said, well, why don't you try one of these? And he actually opened this book, which then, out of which grew a lemon tree. In order for me to understand what lemons meant and what they would be like, taste like, or however that would affect me and my understanding, and this is the same too for anything, known or unknown to you from your physical world activity. So what happened was that out from the tree, various lemons grew upon the tree. And I was shown how I may ask of the tree, first of all, in service, that I may use one of its fruits. I did do this, and it subsequently let go of one of the lemons for me, which plopped straight into my hand. My hand from my consciousness, yes, from my consciousness memory. And it was, in fact, the one that I lost, my right hand. So it didn't just fall off as soon as, yes, one stand. It was still knitted back and everything was safe and well. And it hadn't been sewn on in rough stitches or anything like that. It was all just as it had been from before my accident. And then I took the lemon and I sniffed it and I understood something of its resonance, because the lemon had just grown from the lemon tree right before my eyes, because I had given my love to the book so that I would understand what this lemon tree could do. Simply then what happened was that I took the lemon, I was given a tool to cut it open. I did as I was requested. I cut it in half. I then let go of the instrument, which then subsequently disappeared. I was then given a glass of water, which was a physical thing, in a sense of my understanding of it in the spirit world. There it is, an image I expect to see, because the energy of the being who was with me had presented it with his energy. Therefore, I was combining my energy with his so that I could see it. He gave me the glass of water and told me to squeeze the lemon into the glass of water. I did so. And then he said, now, think of the funniest thing, sensation that you could ever have in your nose. And then put your index finger of your right hand into your mouth and blow very hard. I did that. And then he said, now put your finger into your glass of lemonade that you have just made. And I did that, and all of the lemonade just fizzed. And that was my glass of lemonade.
Okay, can you explain why that situation with your mouth and thinking of something funny? What? How come?
Because the thing that I had felt that mm-hmm. was funny was of bubbles in my nose, as I had felt when I once upon a time
fell into a stream of water, and the water went up my nose.
How did this person know that you were going to think of that?
Because
your consciousness
thought is a living thing. Yes, that's right. And that's what consciousness and the engagement of consciousness is in the spirit world. It's none of this, I am sending you a thought, and then putting your hands on the table, I am sending you a thought. Thought is a real living thing. It is what you send with love to someone else.
Instant.
And it's instantly.
And all-encompassing.
Yes.
Okay.
I was in that situation at that time.
Yes, but how this is intriguing. Okay. So do you have to do that every time you want to make lemonade?
No, I don't do it now.
Well, how do you do it now?
I still use my finger, yes.
Do you?
If you mean that part of it. Yes, absolutely so. That doesn't mean to say I have a dirty finger or anything like that. They won't get any bugs off me, you see.
I'm amazed at that part of it in particular.
Yes, but it was actually a part of my memory, and now it's become a useful tool. Even those situations, you see, that were... in a sense, some would say disturbing because I slipped and fell into the water, actually, and it was like an accident, you see.
Okay, so who is this being that was teaching you this?
His name was Charles Henry.
Charles Henry. Did you know him before?
No, I had never met him. And he was a person who was a mulatto. He was of ethnic origin, of African, and of a Northern European stock.
And how did you meet him?
I met him in the halls of learning.
Okay.
He was a person who wore a blue tunic with a blue braided hat.
So this is the sort of thing that anybody could experience. We go to the halls of learning like you might go to a library.
Yes.
And you meet people and learn from each other as well as exploring for yourself.
Oh, absolutely so. Never think that your consciousness, your mind, is that you have to discover everything. But however, it will depend upon your ability to allow others to come into your life, to not bring untold influence upon you that will lead to misery, but that it will be something which is positive. That doesn't mean to say that it's going to come from all of the thoughts and aspirations that you've made within your life, perhaps as a religious study or theocracy, because oftentimes those conditions and those situations are not necessarily born of reality. However, because of the fact that what happened to me in my life, even though it was not a being that I had met before ever, I had never seen a person of that color. I had seen other peoples who were much darker than him. And that, in actual fact, there were many energies that I had met previously who were as black as soot. But they were not that many. And most, in fact, all I had ever seen were slaves, were enslaved peoples that had ever touched me in my physical life, you see?
Yes,
and so there were not very many of those.
That's interesting. So does this lemonade taste and smell the same to everybody who tastes it? And do you have to teach people how to taste things in the spirit world?
That depends, my dear friend. If I sense myself that the person who has come for a glass of my lemonade, or that I meet upon their passing, is in fact has a sense that they would, they may like a glass of lemonade, but they'd much rather prefer to have strawberries, then that would be something which will tint their own lemonade flavour. It will still be lemonade, but with a hint of strawberry. You see?
So, because I know that you make this in particular for children.
Yes.
So
that's right.
But So it does taste, it will taste the same.
Absolutely.
And not just because you've said it's lemonade. No. If they didn't know that they were going to be drinking lemonade, it would taste like lemonade to
it
them.
It would absolutely be lemonade, yes.
Mm.
Absolutely, yes.
Have you any fruits or anything like that in the spirit world that you can make lemonade with, or, okay, something, either aid with, a drink with, that we don't have in the physical? So you're not recreating a taste or a fruit, as it were. It's something unique to the spirit world.
Well, yes, certainly there are fruits like Leposcu, which come from the planet of Labina. And Leposcu are a sort of a round fruit, a bit like a pomegranate, I suppose, but that Leposcu actually have a fiery red fruit in it, which is as sweet as the nectar of, well, in a sense of honey. It's like a cross between honey and a very strange, quite heady concoction, I understand. And it has an effervescence as well. You bite into it. It's a very fleshy plant, fruit itself. And in a sense, a bit like a pomegranate, it has quite a hard exterior. But you can just simply peel it off with your fingers.
Mm-hmm.
And the flesh of the fruit itself is extremely engaging. And for some people, if they eat too many of them, they can actually fall over.
Not in the spirit world, on this planet where they actually are in physical form originally.
Well, if they were on, coming from that planet, beings do that. Mm. It's a bit like deer, I suppose, eating too many apples.
Mm, yes.
Except they're much more potent than apples.
Really?
Yes.
So how did you find out about that plant then? You met somebody from Labina and exchanged recipes?
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
Really?
But it happens all the time, you see, if you're not of a closed mind.
Yes.
If you want to be of a closed mind, then you'll only meet with the things that you accept.
Mm.
It's a bit like people who maybe come to our side of life, and I would say, watch out for the flying fish or for the flying whales or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And they would come back to me a long period of their own engagement later and say, well, I've never seen one.
Mm-hmm.
A flying whale or whatever.
And
I would simply say, what did you expect? What did you expect? Was it in your mind? Or perhaps you just thought it was some senile dementia of some other spirit whom you had met and simply didn't believe it. It's a bit like, I suppose, in a sense, the ways of children and fairy tales, or the ways of children and their not areas of make-believe, but of seeing a form of possibility, not fantasy, but of possibility. There's a great difference there between fantasy and possibility. If it is a possibility to a child's mind, then it's in any event that one day it could possibly happen. If it's fantasy in a child's mind, in a sense, they know it would never happen because it's pure fantasy.
Hmm.
And doesn't come from the elliptical world that they are aware of being true positive or truth reality. That's the way in which it will have been painted to them. If, however, you have a child who simply does not negotiate their ways around such matters, for example, that they still believe that fairies are real, then they will see them.
Because they are.
Because they are.
Absolutely.
Yes,
it's so important, isn't it, to be open-minded in so many ways.
In so many ways, but also carefully minded as well. Because there are situations, there are branches of reality within the physical life experience where spirit interact with physical life, And you may think that just because some people come out with one reality within their landscape of consciousness that they paint as being real doesn't necessarily mean to say it is real.
No, well, yes. I mean, that is a whole new show, isn't it, really?
But I'm just making that as a point of reference so that you understand the juxtaposition. I have to be careful that just because I'm saying that within a child, if it only says, I understand that fairy are real, then they're going to be able to eventually see them.
Yes.
Purely and simply because they accept they're real.
Yes.
Now, if you were a child and you say, I believe that a certain form of alien is real, doesn't necessarily mean to say that being is automatically going to be seen by them. Because it may simply be something that they have regurgitated or heard or understood within their own physical light of experience. And that physical light of experience, I have to say, may even come from a time or state when they were in the womb.
Really, yes.
Yes, absolutely so.
Yes, well, children are subject to many more things like that on the TV. And
prior birthing, yes.
And also, well, computer games and things, much more so these days. So, like I say, that's another whole issue because there's being gullible and being sensible and there's so many different things around that.
And because of that, you see, I often think that actually people should understand that with a child's life starts and begins at conception.
Okay.
And its influence, the influences of physical state upon it, begin there also.
Okay. All right. Well, we can talk about that too on another time.
Yes.
But meanwhile, once again, thank you very much, Gregory.
With love and light and blessings be upon your journey, little bird. Thank you so. God bless.
Thank you.
Everyone.
And we hope you've enjoyed the show. Please do visit our website. It's www.spirit-teaching.com. And I'd like to say thank you so much. My name is Sylvie Avery. This has been Spirit's Work. And until next time, be peaceful, be positive, and focus on your goal, knowing you're not alone in trying to create a better world. Goodbye.